Well, hello everybody. Back again. We'll continue our conference with a talk by the, well, I think in tech circles one could say famous Nelson Beebe, being around tech since probably day one or at least day two. So he'll talk about extending tech and Metafont with floating point arithmetic.
Okay. I have copies of my talk, which didn't get done in time to make it into the handouts, but there's about 10 or so up here if anyone really wants a copy. It's going to have some revision before the final version because it was prepared in great haste at the last minute for various reasons. Just by way of background, I happen to sit in a mathematics department now, and I have for the last 20 years, but I have actually 4 feet. One is in physics, one is in chemistry, a very large one is in computer science, and another one's in mathematics. So I have these cross-boundary interests, and I'm currently writing 2 books about the subject in the third line of the slide title. Those of you who have used tech for more than just typesetting with canned style files have at some point probably had to do arithmetic, and you may have found that text arithmetic is somewhat peculiar. And so part of this talk will tell you how it's peculiar, both tech and Metafont, and why it's that way and what might be done about it. This talk is dedicated to 2 gentlemen, one of whom you're probably familiar with, this chap on the left getting his award at a dinner a couple of years ago of the original drawing of the Mac screensaver that Duane Bibby did. Our friend Don Knuth, and on the right, from across the bay, William or Velville Kahan, who I'll say more about a little later in this talk. Well, how is arithmetic done in tech? Tech allocates a word of 32 or more bits to store numbers in. And if they just count things, such as in the tech count registers, then you count 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on, or minus 1, minus 2, minus 3. If you want to have the ability to represent fractional values, then tech has a different representation where it stores 16 fractional bits, 14 or more integer bits. That leaves 2 left over. One of those is the sign bit, and the other one is an overflow bit that it uses for purposes that we'll see in a little bit. In fact, in the next point here. Tech has this peculiarity that it can detect overflow on divide and multiply, but not on addition and subtraction. I view this as a bug. Don, when I talked to him about it, calls it a feature. He said there were too many places in tech that would have to be changed to fix this. And the reason that's the case is he didn't use a subroutine call every time he needed to add integer values. He coded it in line, and so it's whatever the arithmetic does. With Metafont, it's even a little more peculiar. This message that's at the bottom of the screen is the kind of thing you can cause Metafont to issue. And as you'll see in the next slide, here's the kind of thing that can happen. Metafont has similar kind of representation of fractional numbers, but its integers are restricted to 12 bits. 2 to the 12th is 4096. So you ask it to load an expression parser, and then you get to type in expressions and you get the answer back. Normally they occur underneath, but I moved them off to the right to make them stand out and fit on a slide. So you type in 4,095 and you get that back. And you type in 4,096 and it says enormous number. Well, that's not so enormous, but for Metafont it is. And it reduces it for you and you get this number 4,095.99998. And then you say, well, what's infinity? It knows about infinities. And that's also the same number. And an epsilon, well, that's a little tiny number and that's that much. And then you say, well, what's 1 over that? And it says, whoops, overflow. So it caught that in the divide. And it gives you this peculiar number. Now you divide this into one, and then you should get about 50,000, but it truncated at that. And that has to do with the number of bits that it allocates for integers and fractional bits. In fact, you can see that here it actually has been able to use 15 bits. But I told you it only allows you up to 12. So for input, you're restricted to 12, but there's some slop allowed for intermediate computations to get a little bit bigger, but not much bigger. And now you try to do some expressions, and you type in 1/3, and you get, as you expected, 0.3333 ad infinitum, and you multiply 3 times that, and you get not 99999, but an 8 there. That's a little odd. You try some subtractions, and well, 1.2 minus 2.3, that's correct, and 1.2 minus 2.4, that's correct. 1.3 minus 2.4, and whoa, something strange is happening here. And this all has to do with the fact that there just aren't enough bits to do the job here. And so here's a remark from a paper published some years ago about the history of computing, that in the early days of computers, early days meaning 1940s, early 1950s, no computers had what we today call floating point arithmetic. And programmers had to jump through hoops to get things to work right with continual scaling of numbers. And when they didn't scale them correctly, they got completely wrong answers. Don Knuth has a quote about this, which I happen to like, because a lot of books seem to think floating point arithmetic is so trivial that it's not worth discussing. And you can find even books on Fortran that don't have the word floating point arithmetic in the index, which is very puzzling. He also had an important comment in 1973. This is about 4 years before he began work on tech, when he got the ACM Turing Award. This is viewed in computer science as the closest thing to the Nobel Prize that a computer scientist can get. Kahan also got one later. And I'll let you read the quote, but the critical point here is he's essentially saying that the state of floating point arithmetic is such that analysis is hopelessly difficult. And you'll see why in a slide or two. So why didn't tech have floating point arithmetic? Well, we have to go back to 1977, 78, when Don started writing tech, and look around at the machines that were available, and there was a lot of difference between them. They varied in precision, that is the number of bits or digits available, the range, from the largest to the smallest number, how they rounded, what happened when there was underflow, that is a number that's too small to represent, overflow, a number that's too big to represent. The number base varied. 2 is common on computers today, but in those days there were quite a few other choices. This Russian computer, the Zetun, had base 3. But actually, it turns out its floating point was never used, but it was part of the design. And a number of other bases were tried. The most significant ones, really, today are 2, 10, and 16. Maples is actually 10,000 internally, but it behaves as if it were 10. And so here's some of the things that could happen when tech was developed. If you took almost any programming language and did some simple numerical operations, you could find, for example, that multiplication didn't commute. If you had a Cray supercomputer, some of the early models, that didn't happen. If you multiplied a number by 1, you could get something different than 1. If you multiplied by number by 2, you could get something different than the sum of those two numbers. You could check that x was different from y and then divide 1 by x minus y and get a zero divide error. On many machines, what happened when you got an underflow, that is the exponent got smaller and smaller and smaller, and then it would wrap around and that would become a big exponent. Software interrupt handlers would take over and patch that up and give you an approximation of the right answer. But that wasn't universally true. C on the PDP-10, which I still have running in a software environment, has this feature that an underflow wraps to overflow, overflow wraps to underflow, and you keep on going with a completely wrong answer. And a typical behavior for underflow or zero divide was to kick you off the machine instantly. So all of these problems made use of floating point arithmetic rather problematic. Another problem, of course, is that there was no standardization. Every vendor had its own unique system, unique to them. And several vendors, including Digital Equipment, which had sort of brought in the mini computer age, they had several flavors on some of their machines. If you then turn to programming languages and said, well, how do I use floating point arithmetic? You discovered, again, great variety. Don Knuth in the early 60s was involved in compiler development with a subset of ALGOL called ALGOL-S, and wrote a compiler for it at Stanford, and that's sort of how he got his first big involvement with larger computing projects. And you discover that in ALGOL and Pascal and SAIL, the language that was first used for Tech and Metafont in his sabbatical year, there was only one floating point data type called real, and that corresponds to what we today call single precision. Fortran on most machines has always had single and double, but curiously called real and double precision. And some machines had a third one called real star 16, which is essentially a quadruple precision. C and C++, well, C came along about 1969-1970. C++ started out as C with classes in the mid-80s, and by 1990 or so became known as C++. Well, they originally had only double. And then the float, which is again another strange name because it should be single, was added in 1989 in the ISO standard. And then 10 years later, a third type, long double, was added. So if you were a C programmer, it's taken a long time to get access to these higher precisions. In other languages like the newer Java and C sharp, there are only two precisions, a bit of two, float and double, but they totally screw up the arithmetic system. And there's a very interesting paper you can easily find on the web that explains why. Even with these differences, you still had compiler differences, because you could have a compiler that allowed you to say double X and float Y, and it could treat them both identically. So you couldn't predict exactly what precision you were going to get. And today, which is now 27 years after the current arithmetic system first became available in hardware, compilers on BSD Unix do not give you access to it. When you do input and output, there's an issue that creeps in that has to do with the base of the number system. And since most computers today have base 2, and humans tend to work in base 10, there has to be a conversion going on here. And this turns out to be a distinctly non-trivial problem. This is one of these problems that everybody thought was trivial, but it took about 50 years of computing experience before the problem was properly solved in the early 1990s. And just as an example, this 128-bit binary format, which represents approximately 33 or 34 digits, you can need 11,500 digits to guarantee correct rounding in the intermediate conversion. Don himself in Tech wanted to be able to take these numbers that Tech had internally with the 16-bit fractional part and write them out in decimal. And he wondered, you know, how many decimal digits do I have to output so that when I input that number again, I get the same binary number back. And he worked out some code that wasn't very complex. It was 10 or 15 lines. And he was pretty confident he did the right thing. In fact, in one direction, you can check it exhaustively fairly easily. But it kind of bothered him that he couldn't prove that it was correct, and it took him about 12 years before he finally came up with a proof in 1990 in a paper with this marvelous title, A Simple Program Whose Proof Isn't. And this is 10 lines of code, and it's a really, really tough problem to prove that it's correct. Today, most languages still do not guarantee exact base conversion. So you input a number in decimal, and you output it immediately with a print statement, and you'll get something different. Now, Tech has the design feature that's really one of the critical things to its longevity, and that is that you get the same results everywhere. It doesn't matter whether you're on a Cray or a 16-bit mini computer or a desktop computer, works the same, and that's extremely important because it means that documents can be exchanged and people can be confident at two ends of a connection that they're seeing the same thing. Tech actually does use a little bit of floating point arithmetic, but only for the glue between words on a single line. And small differences between machines there can make a tiny difference, but you can't see the difference, and it doesn't change the line breaking or the page breaking. Metafont doesn't have any floating point arithmetic at all. So to deal with this messy situation in the floating point world, Val Kahan at Berkeley started a project about 1976-77, just about the time Don was working on tech, to come up with a new design for floating point arithmetic. And this was first implemented in the Intel 8087 coprocessor. It later became part of the CPUs in the Intel product line. And that was about 1980, but because of standardization activities, it took about 5 more years to finalize things, and unfortunately, some things changed in those 5 years, with the result that people who use the Intel processors today do not really have the proper full specification of this arithmetic system. But what it did define was binary formats for 32-bit, 64-bit, and a slightly longer 80-bit format. Some vendors later added 128-bit format, roughly 33 or 34 digits. And the way this floating point system works is you have a sign represented by a single bit, so that represents a power of minus one, and you have a value f, which lies in, for this particular system, between one and two, that is no smaller than one and slightly less than two, times a power of two. And it does have a sign zero when f is zero. And it has some interesting features that when you have the largest possible exponent, p here, and f is zero, you call that an infinity, and when f is non-zero, you call it a not a number, a nan. And there are two flavors of them, except on the Intel processor. And also for the smallest stored exponent, that is when p is the most negative value it can get, you allow f to not to lie necessarily within the range 1 to 2 anymore, but can now start to have leading zeros and march off to the right, and you gradually underflow to zero. Another important feature is that instead of trapping to an interrupt handler when something nasty like a zero divide happens, you simply set a flag that this happened and you carry on. And the way you carry on is by decreeing that one divided by zero is infinity. And zero divided by zero is an n. And there are various other rules that take care of other cases. But it tries to do something sensible and allows the hardware to proceed at full speed without having to trap. It defines four ways to round the results. This also was quite new because almost all machines previously chopped the result. That is, they would compute a product and then just lop off the bits or digits they didn't need. A few architectures had rounding instructions, but they were relatively uncommon. Well, IEEE has four ways of rounding. You can round to the nearest, to zero, to plus infinity or minus infinity. And I mentioned on the last point here, one of the things you do with a NAN is use it to record an impossible function value. So for example, if you ask for the square root of minus one, that doesn't exist in the real axis, and so you return a NAN for such a case. Just to give you a flavor for what this arithmetic system is capable of representing, the key points here, four storage formats, a fifth one that I'll talk about later, that allow you from 7 to 34 digits, and you can see the rough exponent ranges. This is for the gradual underflow numbers, normal numbers, the smallest value and the largest value, and they're of course approximate. There's corresponding decimal formats that were theoretically possible, but until very recently have not been accessible, and I'll have more to say at the end about these. But the key point here is that it's roughly the same number of digits in each of these formats, but the decimal exponent ranges are bigger. Well, one thing to note about floating point arithmetic is that the advice given in many textbooks and even some compilers is wrong. floating point arithmetic is not fuzzy arithmetic. And you'll see many textbooks that recommend introducing fudge factors like 10 to the minus 5 or 10 to the minus 6 in your computations, and even suggesting maybe we should outlaw comparison of floating point numbers because they're fuzzy and you can't compare them. This is nonsensical. One is less than two in floating point arithmetic, without a doubt. The key point is that floating point results can be exact as long as they're representable, that is, they don't take more bits or digits than you have available. And you can always multiply by a power of the base as long as you don't underflow or overflow. And if the signs and exponents are the same, then no shifting is required to do a subtraction, so the subtraction is exact. There is, however, a problem when the base is something other than 2 or 10, and it's called wobbling precision. And to demonstrate it, if you take a value pi divided by 2, about 1.5 something, and base 16, it starts out 1.9922 and so on. Well, remember in base 16, you're using 4 bits to represent a digit. And so 1 is really 0001 in binary. So there are 3 leading 0 bits. Now you take this other constant, pi divided by 4, it starts out C.910, and C is 1100, so it has no leading 0 bits. So this one has about 3 more bits of precision than that one. It's almost a difference of a decimal digit. So if you program on a machine with hexadecimal arithmetic, and this was the IBM mainframe series and a number of other competitor machines that implemented the same system, it's better to add 2/4 of a pi than to add half a pi. And you have to be eternally aware of this in programming. Now, to the choice of binary versus decimal, for the most part, for more than 40 years, people have not had a choice here. If you were going to program a digital computer in Fortran or C or Java or any of these other languages, you're going to get binary arithmetic. But the problem is humans are less uncomfortable with decimal arithmetic. I say that intentionally. I didn't say humans are comfortable with arithmetic because most aren't. But it's even worse when you tell them they have to do arithmetic in binary. And an example of where the base makes a difference here is this example of a sales tax computation. You have 7.7 of some currency unit. You want 5% of that. And no matter what binary precision you take, doesn't matter how many bits, you can have 1,000 bits or 1,000,000 bits, and you convert that back to decimal exactly, you're going to get 0.03499999999. And then you round that. Well, if you're rounding it to the nearest hundredth here, that's less than 5 in that position, so this rounds to 0.03. And yet the exact answer is 0.35, and depending on the financial rounding rules, you may be required to round that up. So you can be off by 0.01 here. And although this doesn't seem like much, and isn't if you're selling Rolls-Royce automobiles, it matters a lot in a business with small transactions like a grocery store, a telephone company, and so on. Hand calculators, some of us probably still have one of these in a drawer but rarely use it, they actually have decimal arithmetic internally, and so that was done intentionally because it avoids this problem, strings of nines, that confuse people. In the decimal arithmetic system that we'll talk more about through this talk, there are an additional 4 rounding rules added, and that was to deal with requirements in some jurisdictions of different ways of rounding. And one important advantage of using decimal arithmetic for computation is this base conversion problem of this 11,500 digits for intermediate work disappears. And this, in some ways, is probably the most important advantage, that what you put into the computer is what you get out if you print it back again. In 2 years after the binary floating point standard, there was a radix independent floating point standard issue, but it was not really implemented by anybody as far as I can tell. But it was designed to be sort of a generalization of the binary system for arbitrary base, and so you could get a decimal system out of it. the COBOL programming language, which is used extensively for business computations, has for a great many years required 18 digits, and recently the requirement was raised to 32 digits and also to require floating point arithmetic. 2 years ago and last year, there were proposals put before the ISO committees for C++ to add decimal arithmetic. IBM has been running for more than two decades a couple of scripting languages, one of which, Rex, is an ISO standard, that are based on arbitrary precision decimal arithmetic. And there's a library that they wrote and have made freely available that allows you to represent numbers with up to 10 to the ninth digits and nine-digit exponents. The experience with that arithmetic system in the Rex language has led IBM to add firmware support in their mainframes, and in last fall, in fact, late November, just after I got back from Morocco, the first release of GCC with support for add, subtract, multiply, and divide became available. Nothing else. No square root, no sign, no input, no output, no debugger, just four basic operations. And since I had been working on a software library and a book to go with it about floating point arithmetic, and the library itself covers all of the C99 standard and a great deal more, and I had designed it to be able to support decimal arithmetic right from the beginning, this was my first hands-on experience. So basically for the last 6 months I've been busy doing a lot of work in decimal. So I mentioned that the IBM mainframes got firmware support for decimal arithmetic just over a year ago. They also got the IEEE binary format added 6 or 7 years ago. On the 21st of May this year, the PowerPC 6 was announced, and those chips are the first ones to have decimal arithmetic, probably in 40 years. Intel has been working on this as well. They have not said anything publicly, but they have a competing encoding of decimal arithmetic, and they have released a decimal library, and about March or April of this year, GCC added support for that library as well, which leads me to believe that behind the scenes, the hardware engineers are trying to figure out how to put this into their processors as well. Now, some issues with IEEE arithmetic. There are lots of wonderful features that one would like to use, but here we are 27 years since the Intel 8087, and most of those features run inaccessible on most platforms and from virtually all programming languages. It wasn't until the 1999 C standard that the C standard actually admitted that this arithmetic system existed, even though in 1989, when the previous standard was out, there were already several hundred million of them in use. There's another problem that because it hasn't been, these features have not been accessible to programming languages, programmers don't know about them, textbook writers don't either. And so what people don't know about is stuff they don't and can't use. Another problem is that some systems have had only partial implementations of the standard. So if you tried to use its features, you were thwarted when you ported to a new platform because you discovered there that some feature you relied on isn't in that vendor's hardware. A feature that the Intel processors have, and also the Motorola 68000 family and some older mainframe architectures, is that what you store in memory is not what the CPU works in. The CPU has a longer register. In the case of the Intel processors, an 80-bit register. And what happens then is you load, say, a 32-bit or a 64-bit value out of memory. It gets extended to this longer register. Computations are done in the register, and then it has to get put back in storage, which means it has to be shortened. And that involves reducing the exponent range and also rounding it. Now, the thing is, on these intermediate calculations, there was also some rounding going on because you had this 80-bit format, and off at the right you had to round. So there's actually two roundings going on. And so this sometimes leads to peculiar features. Another issue with IEEE is they left some features unspecified. For example, underflow and overflow. They didn't say whether you detect, whether you do rounding before or after the underflow or overflow happened. So let's look a little bit at how decimal arithmetic differs from the binary arithmetic, because this stuff here is new to virtually everybody. I'm one of the few people on the planet outside of two or three people at IBM who have ever programmed a decimal arithmetic that's still alive, probably. The encoding system here is, it looks the same, except that F is no longer a thing that lies between 1 and 2 or 1 and 10, but rather it's an integer. Now, why did they do it this way? Well, if you make F be an integer, you can simulate fixed point arithmetic. This means the decimal floating point hardware can also be used for the fixed point arithmetic needed in COBOL and in other financial calculation languages. C-sharp, for example, has a monetary data type that works as sort of a fake decimal. It does mean, for example, that different storage forms with different numbers of trailing and zeros, they compare equal, but they're not the same bit patterns in storage. So if you just do a straightforward compare as a bit string, you get the wrong answer. The what's called the quantization, that is the number of fractional digits here, is something you can actually detect and set and retrieve. And so you can do checks in computations whether you've changed from, say, working in euro cents to tenths of euro cents. Like the binary format, there's signs, zeros, infinities, and two kinds of nans, but unlike the binary formats, you can tell what you have from looking at one byte. And this is important for long data lengths. As I mentioned, there are 8 rounding modes, and there are currently 2 competing compact storage formats, one from IBM and one from Intel. These turn out to have, from the programmer's point of view, the same apparent range and precision, but there are slight differences that could allow them to be distinguished between. Now, given that Tech and Metafont have to guarantee identical results across all platforms, this says we still can't just say, well, why don't we add IEEE binary arithmetic? Because I've already explained there are these unspecified things about rounding behavior and long registers and order of operations and compilers and so on that make it impossible to guarantee identical results everywhere. So if you were to use that, you would then have platform dependence for sure, and that's not acceptable. Floating point arithmetic is not associative. If you add A and B and C, 3 numbers, it matters whether you add A and B first, B and C first, or A and C first. You can get 3 different answers, and one of them may be correct, and the other 2 may be radically wrong. The long internal registers, of course, change precision and they change results. So, and there's another feature introduced in 1990 by IBM in their PowerPC chips, an instruction that computes a multiply add, and it does this as an exact product and then adds the third value with a single rounding. Now, if you're not a numerical analyst, it's not obvious why this might be important, but it turns out multiply adds occur a lot. IBM was able to make this instruction work as fast as a single multiplier add, therefore they got a factor of 2 immediately. And in the 17 years since this was introduced, numerical analysts have found all kinds of neat applications of this. You can, for example, multiply matrices and guarantee that the results you get are exact to the second last bit. There's a book by a numerical analyst at Hewlett-Packard named Peter Markstein that shows you can use this multiply add instruction to guarantee things like exactly rounded square roots, exactly rounded divide operations when you don't have a divide instruction. So what one concludes from all of this mess is that the only way that we could possibly introduce floating point arithmetic into Tech and Metafont is to do it in software. Because then you have one software package, just like the Tech engine, that's the same everywhere. So you come along and you find this quote on the web, and we've seen similar things. I think Roberto had this number 200K up earlier today, and this of course caught Hans's attention, and you've heard, I think, good arguments today for why this could be interesting and what might help to have this in tech. So I argue that if we're going to interface Lua to tech, then what we really want to do is, since tech has this misery of trying to do arithmetic with very funny things like backslash, advance, and so on, that it would actually be better to put the arithmetic not into tech itself, but rather into Lua, because Hans has demonstrated that you can get back and forth very easily. So really all we need to do is to have the arithmetic inside Lua be what tech uses, but not binary arithmetic, decimal arithmetic in software, so it's the same everywhere. Scripting languages, including Lua and Awk and Perl and Ruby and Python and so on, tend to have only a single floating point type, and it's usually what C has as its double type, and that also means today the binary format. Some years ago, I extended the Awk scripting language to support a long double data type, which could be either 80-bit or 128-bit. And once I had made some progress in my own library, I have extended Awk for decimal arithmetic. What I'm proposing is that because machines are fast and memories are big today, that it really makes sense to adopt a higher precision format. Certainly at least 34 digits, and maybe even the 70-digit format for reasons that I'll explain in a slide or two, and make that the default numeric type. And the library that I'm developing, which will be available under an open source license, supports these higher precisions right from the beginning and supports a wide variety of floating point precisions, more than anybody else's has ever done. Now here's a quote, again from some time ago, by Balkahan, 1965, 42 years ago, and he complains as a young man that the accessibility of double precision in Fortran and Elgol would mean that it's a substitute for ingenuity. And what he was arguing there is, he's saying, you know, if you have to think really, really hard to make something work in limited precision, well, if you expand the precision, many of your problems just go away.
But it's still limited.
It's still limited, but it makes it much, much less likely you're going to hit those problems. And that's why I'm arguing that we probably should think about a 70-digit format as what we might want to adopt, because then it just isn't going to bother us. Here's another quote from him. This is on the subject of, given a value x, can you compute its square root, its hyperbolic tangent, its sine, its cosine, its error function, and so on, and know that the result you have is going to be correctly rounded. And he says, this is a tough, tough problem, and it may be a deep mathematical problem to even solve it. We don't know what the solution is today. What we can do, however, is compute in higher precision and make it probabilistically likely that the results you get are correctly rounded to a very high degree of probability, so that only, say, a few numbers out of several billion might be incorrectly rounded. In fact, this problem is called the table maker's dilemma, and here's an example. This particular representation, some of you may never have seen before. It's a way of putting floating point numbers for binary into C99. So we have a binary string here representing hexadecimal, the power of 2, and we ask what its log is. Well, its log is this number, and there's this long string of Fs. That's 11111 in binary, and there are 62 of them, and you need roughly three times as many digits in this answer as you had here before you get up to here to find out which way to round. Do you round up or down? And if you have higher precision arithmetic routinely available, well, you have enough to cover most of these cases. Metafont has a random number generator, and I believe there has been one written in tech macros as well. And the problem with random number generators in math libraries on most machines is that they're never specified precisely by programming language standards. They're just there, and you assume that something reasonable has been done by the vendor, although that's usually not the case. In fact, almost anything having to do with random number generators that's dated before 1990 is worthless. And so again, the solution to this is to put a good, modern, well-studied random number generator in software into the package you're using and then use it everywhere, and not to rely on what the vendor provided. So how much work would it take to do this? Well, I've done this to demonstrate feasibility of it. I mentioned that I'd taken one version of awk, this one in fact, and added decimal arithmetic to it. So this is the total number of lines in each of these six packages. This is how much I had to take out. This is how much I had to put in. It's really pretty modest. And look at Lua. Lua is a marvel. 25 lines I had to remove out of 16,000. And I had never seen the guts of Lua before. The morning I started to do this, I opened up the internals of Lua for the first time. I searched for square root and sine and cosine, found them. Said, oh, there's a nice table. I fixed that table, do a few other things, change the I/O. Boom, I'm done. And it took only 2 to 4 hours for each of these. So I believe that you can take Ruby and Python and Perl and any number of other scripting languages and do something similar with a comparable amount of effort. And just for comparison, I put the amount of code in the C versions of Metafont and Tech here. So you can see these are somewhat bigger than these, although awk, the GNU version of awk is quite large. It has a lot of extra features. But the critical point here is there are zero lines of changes here. Not one single line of macros anywhere in the world, and not one single font is going to be invalidated by our adding floating point arithmetic in Lua inside Tech. Nothing will change, but new things will be possible. Let's look a little bit about how Tech does arithmetic. I could have put this at the beginning, but it can fit here as well. So we mentioned that it uses 16 fractional bits, and 2 to the minus 16th it calls a scale point. And it turns out the wavelength of visible light is about 100 of these little tiny units, and which says the rounding errors in Tech don't matter. Unfortunately, its largest dimension depends on the number of other bits you have left. And in a 32-bit word, there's only 14 left, and that only gives you a little under 6 meters, and that's not quite enough for a billboard. And certainly you see a lot of buses in cities in this country and in Europe now with these big color things on the sides of them, and somehow they were typeset and printed. And here's an example of how you have to do arithmetic. And this gets, frankly, pretty ugly. I mean, what you're trying to say is this trivial multiply add, but it took you 5 lines of ugliness. And to make matters worse, although in this particular case, this particular fraction has a simpler representation as 3/4, it doesn't in general, and you risk getting overflow. Except that Tech doesn't detect overflow reliably, so you can get the wrong answer without knowing that you have done so. Tech provides no elementary functions whatsoever, not even square root. Metafont does a little bit better. It's got a dozen or so functions. And if you want to see how awful it can be to do arithmetic in Tech, look inside the guts of this package, or there's an appendix in the Tech book or something near the back of it where Don works out how to do a divide, and it's awful. Now, there's a lead in here to some other little project of Don's in this Art of Computer Programming series that he started writing when he was 24 years old. He decided to demonstrate the implementation of algorithms in an assembly code for a machine that didn't exist, and he called this machine MIX, and you can read in the early versions of the books what MIX stands for. Well, by the 90s it was clear this needed updating, and he came up with a new one called MMIX, or 2009 if you like, and he developed an assembly language for it, and he also developed a virtual machine for it. And once you've got a computer, that is the virtual machine, you ought to have an operating system. And so he said the operating system should be called NX. It's a virtual operating system. It doesn't exist yet, but the virtual machine does exist. There's a book about it. This is the Springer version of it, and here's the Addison Wesley version of it. And this runs. And I found this thing in searching the web, and there's a workstation you can buy that looks like this. You can get it in a broad color range, and it has an MX inside.
Every broad color range.
MX, the virtual machine, is written as a literate program, as Don is wont to do, and is a good thing to do. And its arithmetic is the IEEE binary format. It has a reasonable number of floating point instructions. And there are versions of the GNU C compiler that you can get with some special options. You can get them to build and generate code for this machine. Now, once you can do that, and if you have the machine running, this means you can take arbitrary C code and make run on this system. So even though NX doesn't exist, someday someone might do this as a student project. And I was interested in seeing whether my library would run on this virtual machine, and it does. It took 10 new lines of code, and I had to have 12 additional lines to work around bugs in the MMIX header files. So 20 lines of changes out of 250,000 lines is not a bad payoff. So I have a complete library running here. At the point, there's a stable GNU C compiler that will generate code for this architecture with decimal arithmetic. I can have decimal arithmetic on the system too. What number am I at here? Yeah, this is the last one. Okay, so there's the end. And the Beatles did this the same year that Volume 2 came out, so I thought I should point out the connection there. Now, just to sort of fill you in on what the status of the GNU compiler work is, as I mentioned, the first release was in November, and that was for the AMD Opteron chip, the 64-bit Opteron. That's a superset of the Intel architecture. By about March of this year, they had a version that would generate code that mostly works correctly for the 32-bit Intel architecture. They claim it works on PowerPC, and that may be true on IBM's operating system. It's not true under Linux. And there's a new release of four versions of GCC every week, and I have been routinely grabbing these and building them to see whether they build successfully. Then if they build, will they actually compile something? On most platforms, they still get internal compiler errors, and they abort for at least some of the code. But at least I now have two CPU architectures, and I'm hoping by the end of this year that on many more architectures this will work. I've been in communication with the guy at IBM who's in charge of this effort on the GNU compiler, and he says it's because it's generating calls to software routines for these basic operations of add, subtract, multiply, and divide, so why couldn't it be the same everywhere and have no dependencies? Well, it turns out it almost is. There's a little bit of stuff that's related to the back end that generates code for a particular platform that they have yet to get sorted out. But I anticipate within 6 months to a year, you will have decimal arithmetic almost everywhere. IBM is working on a decimal library. I'm guessing that Intel probably is. Mine is already working and fully functional and supports a 256-bit format that I hope to coax the GCC people into adding, because that's the big problem in adding a new numeric data type in a programming language. It's not add, subtract, multiply, and divide. That's probably a few lines of code. It's the hundreds of thousands of lines of library support and input and output that you need. And so that's done. And it's working, and when my book comes out, the library will be freely available. If anyone wants to play with this, I'm willing to make binary snapshots of the library plus all of the manual pages available. But it's not quite there yet to release source code, because it's still being changed as I write the book and write the code in conjunction with the book. So that's it. Questions? Taco?
Of course, many questions. Most of it should probably not be done here, but of course I'm interested. But 250,000 lines of code. What does this number signify? What is it compiled to? How long does the compilation take?
With some compilers, I can compile that amount of code in 30 seconds. This code is highly portable. there is no configure script. There's actually a dummy configure script, so you can run it, but it doesn't care. It builds everywhere, including VAXs, including TOPS 20, on the PDP 10. It's difficult in the PDP 11, not because of that it won't run in a PDP 11, but the PDP 11 is a computer that existed before there was networking. And the PDP 11s that I have in software have no way of talking to the outside world except through a terminal interface. So getting data into them and out of them is problematic. But the VAX and the TOPS 20 I routinely use. So this code compiles reliably and it passes its tests. And it's lots and lots of individual files. I mean, every single function is a separate file. So single precision square root is one object file. The double precision is another one. So it's not a monolithic thing. So when you load out of this, you can pull exactly what you need, and everything else stays behind.
Okay, yeah, good, because I was getting worried about.
No, certainly if you were to pull in a wide range of functions, you would use much more than the 200K. But the point is, most of these scripting languages use a handful. Typically what they use are the functions that were available in Kernighan and Ritchie C, which is about a dozen or so, and that's what Fortran had in the late 1950s. But there are a lot more functions that really should be there and need to be there for full access to floating point arithmetic. So this library is going to make that possible, and I would argue that as C99 becomes more widely implemented, it makes sense for scripting languages to revisit the repertoire of math functions that they're offering and radically expand it.
But of course, we could decide on just one of the representation sizes.
Yes, in fact, that's what I'm proposing. Yeah. For something like TEC, you put the arithmetic into Lua, say, and pick the 128 or 256 bit format and say, that is the arithmetic that Lua TEC has. 34 digits or 70 digits.
Did you do any performance tests when you adapted Lua? Because Lua is using the numeric data type
everything. Yeah, the difference though is that Lua is still using hardware binary arithmetic, whereas this goes to a subroutine call where the arithmetic is done in software, so it's not a fair comparison. What is the case, and I didn't mention here, is that every one of those programs I had up completely passed their validation suite in decimal arithmetic in the same way they pass it with binary arithmetic. So that gives me additional confidence in my own library that these independent tests are passing, and there are no glitches anywhere from it. It's hard to say. The only way to tell for sure is going to be to get our hands on PowerPC 6 chips where there's decimal hardware for the first time and compare it with binary hardware.
Seriously,
I don't think it's much of a problem because what we've seen is machines have gotten faster and faster. The software machine for the VAX and the DEC 20, the PDP 10, they run 6 to 10 times faster than the hardware ever did. I mean, they're so much faster. So the overhead of the amount of arithmetic one is going to need in typesetting is really relatively minor. No one is going to be solving differential equations inside TEC, I think. Metamorphosis doesn't need more. But
Lua has only one. Lua uses doubles for everything. Even a for loop. Doubles.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be solving differential equations.
We can certainly look at these issues, but the point is the software implementation that's available now gives you the possibility of making it identical everywhere and gives you immediate access to decimal arithmetic, which we didn't have 6 months ago. And when it becomes available in hardware, then we can look at what the speed differences are. My expectation is that within the next 1 to 2 years, Intel is going to announce new Xeons or whatever they're going to call the chip that are going to have decimal arithmetic. And they're going to do this because IBM's out there promoting the PowerPC with hardware. And the mainframe, it's only in firmware, but we're going to see that in hardware too. Because there's this issue of these two competing encodings, the IBM style and the Intel style, and they really need to be studied quite thoroughly in software before you commit to billions of dollars in expense in fabricating a chip that implements one or the other. Paul back there had a question.
One question here from the uninformed. Leaving the question of who was side, wouldn't TEC be the right language to make the architecture?
So I couldn't hear the last part.
Wouldn't tech be the right language to make the argument for the decision? The ranges
it's
the same.
Well, it's pretty tough. One divided by three, I mean, you is not representable in either binary or in decimal. So infinite precision means infinite. So what you'd have to do is do with the symbolic algebra systems and,
right.
and represent it in rational arithmetic.
Right, right, right. That's what I'm...
You could. In fact, I had email one Tuesday morning from Mike Kolishow, the guy at IBM who developed Rex and NetRex and is the spearhead behind IBM's decimal arithmetic. And he says he meets Don a couple of times a year. And Don has actually admitted to them that in retrospect, he kind of wished he'd put software decimal arithmetic into Tech and Metaphon rather than dealing with this nightmare of the base conversion problem and all of the other issues it brings up. Because had the arithmetic been in software right from the beginning, it wouldn't be a performance issue because that's what the system does and it does it the same way everywhere and there's no alternative. So I'm not sure whether, because the symbolic algebra systems, they still, for the most part, bring in a precision at some point. You want to print out something and you have to tell it how many digits you want. And so when you convert something to a fractional form with point something, 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 you say in Maple, digits equals 50, digits equals 100. So I think for what tech realistically needs, and even for font calculations and doing fancy things with complicated fonts, the arithmetic just needs to have higher precision and be a floating point arithmetic rather than a fixed point arithmetic to get rid of these scaling problems. And if the precision is high enough for intermediate work, it's not going to matter for what the final results of the typography are. A question over there, Alan?
In your list of historical language anomalies, didn't mention one language that looked at this at least a little bit years ago, and that's Ada, which tried to think about this.
It did.
Unsuccessfully.
Right, because Ada, this was a language developed by the United States Department of Defense that got widely adapted in the military and also in parts of the commercial world, notably in Europe. It was a language designed by committee, and it reflects that to some extent, although it did have a chief architect who was fairly decent. And it has regular binary floating point arithmetic, and it has decimal arithmetic, but it's essentially fixed point arithmetic. You scale, you get to specify a step size in the arithmetic. And so there really isn't, and the notion then was the step size might be 0.01 if you're working in euros or dollars. But there isn't really a notion of a proper floating point decimal form. Is there a hand back there? Good, then I'm done.